Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Sunstone Fireside Podcast. I am one of your co-hosts, Blair Osler. Today's guest here with me is Geralyn Hasselpoole. And if you don't know Geralyn, I don't know what planet you're living on. But she's a friend and an amazing activist within the LGBTQ community and the founder of Queer Meals. And I can't wait to dive in and talk to her about her experience working with LGBTQ Mormons, especially lower income and at-risk youth. So let's go ahead and get started. Geralyn, do you want to briefly introduce yourself to our listeners?
Sure. My name is Geralyn Hasselpoole.
Excellent.
Excellent. I have four biological children, and I like to say 400 biological light children.
Oh, right. At least. You got 400 queer kids.
Yeah. Some of them are my age.
Right.
I also have two grandchildren and a wonderful daughter-in-law. So that's weird to say I have grandchildren, but I do. Better own it.
Totally. Right? You own it. You own it. And we're recording right now at Geralyn's place where a lot of queer meal stuff takes place. And I've noticed you have a diversity of wildlife that lives in your home. Can you please introduce us to all the queer-friendly wildlife?
That is not a nice thing to say about Jeff Poole. I have three pigeons, so you'll hear pigeons cooing in the background.
I'm
obsessed with pigeons.
I love it.
And I put the dogs out, but there is still another dog wandering around who hopefully will behave herself.
Excellent, excellent.
Just a bonus spare dog for the day.
Right, you know, because if you take in queer kids and you take in, their pets, you know, yeah. Makes perfect sense. Perfect sense.
And people may be in and out off and on.
Oh, that's totally fine.
Fun. Special surprise guests.
I know. Surprise guest might walk in. We're just going to roll with it. I love it.
I'm married to Jeff Poole.
Yep.
Who is well known in Provo for his wild leggings.
The best leggings.
I feel like there's probably a nickname for him in Provo that we're not aware of yet.
There's an entire Facebook group dedicated to just photos of
citing
like
the leggings guy.
Exactly. Does anybody really know him? He's always with the pink boots. I love it. I love it.
That's so funny. Mm-hmm. And we've been married for, it'll be 29 years in January.
That's lovely.
No. I always tell them we're just playing a terrible game of chicken.
Like, if you don't like it, you leave.
Yeah. Oh, really? Are you unhappy?
All right. So let's get a little bit of background on your relationship with Mormonism and how you got started doing activism in the LGBTQ community.
I was born of goodly parents. And everyone probably says that, huh?
Well, you know, but some people say it out of courtesy.
Well, that's my Mormon cred. Uh-huh. I can quote the very first scripture in the Book of Mormon. I was born in Oregon. My raised LDS. My dad taught seminary for CES for 40 years. My mom was a stay-at-home mom. I'm the oldest of eight children. And my family comes from like the polygamous stock from the Mexican colonies. So,
tell a little bit more about that. That's fantastic. Mine's the polygamous stock, but not the Mexican colonies. Mine's the very much Utah aristocracy of polygamy. I'm not like super proud of all that, but you know, what are you gonna do? Embracing the queerness.
Yeah, no, my great grandparents came out of the colonies. And then my grandparents they had relocated to New Mexico and eventually relocated to Southern Oregon, which is where my family is currently from, and a lot of my siblings still live there.
So how long did you live in Oregon for?
Until 4 years ago, three and a half years ago.
So you lived there your whole life?
Pretty much. I mean, there was like, I went to BYU for a year. I went to...
This explains so much, Geralyn.
I went to, Jeff went to Ricks for a year, mm-hmm. in Rexburg. Rexburg has never been the same since we left.
No, it couldn't be.
No. And then about 3.5 years ago, we moved to Provo, Utah, something I swore I would never do again. I felt like I dusted my feet off when I left.
Right? I felt the same way when I left Provo. I didn't think I'd ever come back. And I'm like, wow, we're here. And I weirdly like it.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of a quirky place to be. I dig it.
And people say, why wouldn't you move to Salt Lake? Or I can't.
No, I know. It's just too urban.
My heart belongs in Provo.
I love it. So then your activism in the LGBTQ community, did that start when you got here in Provo, or were you already doing that in Oregon?
There was a period of time I hate to be this person, but I have a brother that's gay. And he came out.
Are you tokenizing your brother literally within the first 5 minutes of the podcast?
I am. But also, like, I have his blanket permission. But yep. He came out it's been over 20 years.
Oh.
And I remember when he came out having to go through the whole, how do you reconcile this with Mormonism? And I struggled with that for a very long time. Like, how... this is my brother who I love, and I can't be forced to choose between religion and my brother, right?
Right. Well, they're two in the same, right? You know?
And that was really difficult for me. And so it just sort of became a non-issue for a long time. I think it was just that thing that we all knew, but we didn't necessarily talk about. And I was always very supportive of my brother.
Yeah.
But I never realized the depth to which he needed an ally.
Mm-hmm.
And then Prop 8 happened in California.
Oh,
and
yes.
We lived right on the California border in Medford, Oregon. And there was a lot of ugly rhetoric. I mean, everyone knows, right?
Right, right.
And I felt at that time, oh my goodness, we were forced to make a choice.
Yeah.
And I'm never going to choose. I mean, I'm always going to choose my brother.
Yep. Right? Yep. My family, right?
My family. Yeah.
Yep.
And I was so horrified by that. And then I remember, you know, what can I do? What can I do about it? And then the very first year that Mormons Building Bridges marched, which I think was 2012.
Maybe,
was it,
yeah.
2011.
I wasn't completely out yet. I was more just surveying the territory. I think it was 2000.
I was surveying
the territory.
Like a lioness.
Uh-huh. I'm like, I don't know about this, folks. No, but I think it was 2012.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe. And I went to lunch that day with a friend, Matt Workman.
Mm-hmm.
Some people may know who Matt is. And we were eating pizza. And I remember we were both having this discussion about these Mormons in Salt Lake who had marched at Pride. And how incredibly brave that was.
Wow.
And we both, I mean, I was really excited about it. And we both said, and we'd had these long discussions before, like, I feel like there were, at this time, there were Mormons who felt the same way, but we had to have, like, super quiet discussions about it because we didn't want to get in trouble about, like, how can we be better people for the LGBTQ community?
Right.
And back then, I mean, there's just... gay people.
Well,
right?
And
we didn't
think,
even
yeah,
use acronyms or
yeah, there is
we were educating, learning.
I think it's important for people to recognize too, like the world, the Mormon world has changed a lot over the years. I mean, I imagine your brother 20 years ago, and the church's position. I mean, I'm not in any way saying it's anywhere close to where it needs to be, but it has changed significantly. The way we talk about these issues, the way we engage in these issues. Again, I'll be the first to criticize the church for that, but it's undoubtable that it's changed, right?
Yeah.
So then you're involved with Mormons Building Bridges and your eyes are opening up. Are you
all? I wasn't at all, but I remember Matt and I were sitting in this restaurant and saying, what can we do? And we both decided at that moment that we were both going to be much more visible and much more vocal.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't want to say a covenant was made, but that is exactly what it felt like.
Yeah.
Because I think about that often.
Mm-hmm.
But like, that was the moment where I said, it's time to go all in.
That's beautiful.
And, I don't, maybe a few months after that, I marched in our local pride parade with Mormons for Marriage Equality. And I even carried a sign that's on my Facebook that says, like, I apologize for what the Mormons did.
Oh my God.
Oh, and...
And this is your first parade.
My very first pride parade. I'm carrying a sign that says, I'm sorry for what we did.
Uh-huh.
You deserved better.
Uh-huh.
And I wept the entire time.
Mm-hmm.
I cried because people were just so gracious.
Mm-hmm.
And people from the sidelines saying, thank you, thank you, thank you. And
isn't it amazing how for me, pride is a spiritual experience in certain regards. Like, I remember my first pride too, marching down the street, same thing. I had to put on my sunglasses because I started crying because I had never experienced such overwhelming affirmation. It's beautiful. It's beautiful.
It was one of the more spiritual moments of my life, to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
And really empowering. And and I knew that that's where I needed, you know, I needed to. What else? So I tried really hard to get involved with the local LGBTQ community in Southern Oregon. But it turned out that outside of Utah, a lot of people are like, hey, everything's great.
I know.
I'm living my life.
Yeah, right, totally. And I, especially in Oregon, too. I grew up in Washington State, and it's very similar. And it's just like, okay, yeah, we're all good. We love you.
You want help with what? No. I'm sorry, honey. We don't need you. Which was fine. Totally fine. But we marched in more pride parades after that. After marriage equality, like, I started getting groups together to march. One year we handed out 1,000 cupcakes.
Nice.
It was the year that the cake issue was in the Supreme Court. And so we drove and handed out cupcakes with some banners that said, we will bake the gosh darn cake.
Oh, that is the best thing ever.
It was really fun. Oh,
fighting bigotry with cupcakes. That's beautiful.
So I just, and as much as I loved Oregon and my family is there, I was getting more involved with LGBTQ issues in Utah, especially that intersection of Mormonism and LGBTQ issues. And I was, I'd met Sammy Galvez by this time, and he and I had become very good friends, and I was learning a lot from Sammy and from the people that Sammy was introducing me to. And then, and I would come out a couple times a year for Sunstone or for this or for that, and see people. And I ended up, you know, becoming good friends with a lot of people, especially these young BYU students,
right?
LGBTQ students,
tender little students.
Yes, and this was around the same time that USGA had formed. Mm-hmm. I did the USGA logo.
Oh, I didn't know that. I love it. Fantastic. I still want one of those USGA pins. They were out last time I was there, and I was like, I need a pin.
I probably have a spare one hanging around here somewhere.
Score. Okay, podcast over. I got my pin. I'm teasing. So anyway, you were aware of USGA and other groups happening here.
Yes. And I was doing everything I could to help them from Oregon. Like, someone needed groceries, and I would, like, okay, I need some. I'd contact my friends in Provo. And be like, one of my people needs groceries. Can you take them some groceries? Or can you... They need a couch to crash on, or they need this, or they need that. And the whole time I felt like perhaps we would end up in Provo, but I kept telling myself, no, it will consume you.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a good boundary for you to keep an actual 700-mile physical boundary.
Sure, yeah.
So you're not consumed, right?
Right.
And then the exclusion policy happened.
Yep.
And what I thought had been a fire lit under me turned into an inferno. I was so broken. And I know I'm coming from that from a place of complete privilege, but...
No, it's okay to acknowledge that it affected you too. It affected a lot of people.
It did. It did. And it just, it broke my heart.
Mm-hmm.
And not for myself, but for so many people who I knew were just hurting.
Mm-hmm.
And I started immediately sharing stories of people who were affected. And the stories were surprising because the majority of them came from active LDS queer people.
Mm-hmm.
Who were like, how have I been? What? Why?
Why exactly?
Yeah. And expressing their pain, and there was so much pain, mm-hmm. and there was so much pain that like it. I don't think I've ever told this story. Are you ready for a story?
Yeah,
I've never told anyone.
I'm so ready for it.
I took on a lot of pain for a lot of people in those few weeks, and I was in a really bad place from it, you know, just emotionally. And I was at a Sunstone event in Seattle at the Community of Christ, and the pastor of the church there, whose name is escaping me, Anne. Anyway, mm-hmm. And was there. She's a descendant of Joseph Smith. And she asked me, she said, "Are you okay?" And I said, I'm okay. And she said, "You're not. Let's go
no,
talk."
No, no. You're like, "I'm fine."
I'm fine. Mm-hmm. Anyway, we went into a room in the Community of Christ, and she gave me a priesthood blessing. Oh. And it was... nothing lifted immediately, mm-hmm. but the blessing was to grow strong shoulders. Mm-hmm. And I was all, oh, that means nothing's getting better.
It just means you're going to carry your burden differently. Not that it's going away.
Right?
Yeah.
No, but I appreciated it, and that I would be inspired. Mm-hmm. And I thought, okay, well, this is good. And at that same weekend, I realized what I really wanted to do was go out to Provo and host a family-style Christmas for LGBTQ Mormons who would not be welcome at home that year, or who didn't feel like they could be welcome at home.
Wow. And this was about 3 years ago, or
this is,
two,
this
four, four,
four
years,
years
ago.
Ago.
Okay, four
it
years
was
ago.
In 2015.
Okay. Okay.
And so, like, this was Thanksgiving. So I knew that I had very little time to plan.
Right.
So, but I did, and we were able to secure a cabin up in the Provo Canyon, and we were able to get food and presents, and we had t-shirts and pajamas, and it was absolutely magical.
Yeah.
And we had people in and out all weekend. We probably had 40-something people there, all told. Not everyone spent the night, but... And the fun part would be is someone would, like, one person would show up, and then they'd say, "Okay, it's great. Can I call my friends?"
Oh, I
so
love it.
So then friends would come up, and
yeah.
we had enough stuff for everyone. It was very loaves and fishes. Like, mm-hmm. I was like, we're going to run out. We had so much left over, like food
wow.
and everything. And sitting around the table, and we made it specifically LGBTQ folks only. No wow. allies were allowed. We did allow allies to come up for one part of a day, but I wanted people to feel like they could just be unapologetically queer.
Right.
And not have to...
handle straight people's feelings.
Exactly. Especially after the policy, because
right.
at that point there were so many allies who were, you know, weeping and, "I'm so sorry." Mm-hmm. And we needed a place that was joyous.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that's what I did.
Wow.
And... it all came together miraculously. I, of course, got sick because I get sick every year for Safe Christmas. It's my one true talent.
Never fails.
Never fails. And I remember sitting in this great room and at a table and watching people talk and laugh and be who they are and enjoy mm-hmm. one another and take naps safely and...
what about the age group are we talking here? Do we have a full range of age group of people who need this space?
At that Christmas we had, I don't know who the youngest person was, but it was all young adults up to, it was mostly like 20s, 30s. I don't think
okay.
there was anybody. There are people that dropped in who are definitely outside of those
uh-huh.
brackets.
But mostly within the 20s, 30s range.
Yeah.
And most of them students?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, mostly BYU students. Or just young working adults.
Well, and just in my experience too, what I've noticed, because I am definitely a beneficiary of Queer Meals amazing services and a dinner table, but I find some of the most at risk ones are those students who are at risk of losing their status at their school, having transcripts withheld, yep, and diplomas, housing and living problems. Like, I don't think people understand that, like, LGBTQ students here in Provo face just layers and layers and hurdles of just having to get through to do the most basic things like graduating school and having their housing secured.
Yeah, if you're at BYU and you work on campus and something happens that gets you in trouble with the honor code office and you get kicked out of school, you not only get kicked out of school, but within 24 hours you lose your housing and your job.
Right.
And if you have family that has rejected you or says, don't come home if you get kicked out, you are homeless.
Yeah, you're quite literally a homeless queer youth.
We work,
yeah,
with those folks a lot, yep, too. That has been...
Yeah. So I can imagine, like...
We don't talk a lot about it because that's a, yeah, lot of people's private stuff.
Sure, but, sure. But it does happen.
I'm familiar. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So much, like, I'm imagining this experience, too, of, like, Safe Xmas and, like, this place where they can come and literally for the holidays, instead of being burdened with having to take care of everybody else's feelings about who they are, they have a space where they can come be just who they are.
Yeah.
That's beautiful. Yeah. That's beautiful. Okay, so after
The time, yeah, I had a temple recommend, and I was a regular temple attender, and yeah, I sat in that room and said, this is more sacred space to me than any temple I've ever been in. It was that powerful.
Yeah.
And that amazing. And I never wanted it to end, but of course it had to because...
Because, you know, the holidays.
The holidays. People had stuff to do. Right. I actually had to get back to Oregon.
Right.
But
right.
I remember sitting there and saying, how can we recreate this?
Mm-hmm.
This to me was Zion. It was beautiful. It was heaven. It was celestial. I mean, all of the things that we are taught to seek after was, yeah, in that room.
Yeah.
And
virtuous, lovely, of good report, or praiseworthy, right?
Yes, yes. Uh-huh. So I went home and I kept, and I remember the distinct impression telling me, you need to be in Provo. And me saying, no, I can't do it. I cannot. We are not, first of all, I have
spirit
a husband.
Knew, Geraldine. The spirit
the
knew.
The spirit knew. Well, first of all, I have a husband who's never going to work out in Provo. Nope.
Provo has now been touched by the graces of Jeffrey Poole now.
The touching Tonys. That's a whole other thing. Anyway. And I just finally said, okay, you know, if it's meant to happen, if it's meant to be, then... and I usually hate that. Like, if it's meant to be, it's meant to be, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I was like, okay, Lord, if you really want me in Provo, I'm going to need you to make it happen.
Yeah, right.
I don't even know the first thing about how do you relocate after 47, 45 years in one place, right?
Yeah.
And, like, how do I leave my family and my ward and...
Right. Well, exactly. You've been there for 40 years. You have your community. You have your network. I mean, you have your favorite grocery store. I mean, like, come on. Big changes.
Yeah.
But you decided to do it anyway.
Yeah. A few things happened that were very interesting with the timing. The first one was, and I've never told anybody, I've told a few people about this, but I've never spoken publicly about it. My stake president started to harass me about my membership. And talking about how I needed to be excommunicated and because of my public advocacy and that he was calling me in often, telling me that I would never have a temple recommend again, not a calling, like just some, you know, and
wow,
it was really painful, but I decided not to, you know, just leave this alone. And
mm-hmm. I think it's probably more painful than you're letting on, because I know what it's like to be called in by the stake president for things I'm saying and doing. And I imagine, I won't put words in your mouth, but for me, it was the first time I felt so utterly betrayed by my community that this thing about me was going to be the thing that made you kick me out. Like, that's excruciatingly painful. So I'm so sorry you had to experience any part of that.
Well, a really empowering thing happened to me in the middle of that too, in that he was saying, you need to be excommunicated. And I said, okay. I mean, if you do it, I won't tell a soul. And he said, what? And I said, yeah, no, I know you won't tell anyone. And if I don't tell anyone, nobody will know.
Oh my goodness. Look at you, chess master. Checkmate, friend.
And I said, and not only that, like, it doesn't change anything. And he said, what do you mean? You're not a member. And I said, I am a woman in the Mormon church. I have zero institutional power. I have zero hope of any institutional power. If mm-hmm. in fact that was what I was after, mm-hmm. I lose nothing. Right. I'm not given callings anymore. I'm not asked to speak anymore.
You're not ordained. You're not.
Right. Yeah. What do I lose? Mm-hmm. And he said, well, your covenants will be severed. And I said, I don't believe you have the power to sever covenants I made with God.
A freaking man. Look at you. Oh my goodness.
And it was like this moment for me where I was speaking power, not necessarily knowing where it was coming from.
Yes.
But it was this moment where I just continued to feel more in myself. Mm-hmm. And realizing, I felt bad for this guy who was clearly there doing, I mean, he even told me he was there at request of someone above him.
Right. Don't you love it when they say that in the office? I'm like, could you just at least give me names and I'll go talk to him myself? Wow. Wow.
Yeah. He received a packet from Salt Lake.
Wow.
About like things that I'd written, things that I'd said on Facebook and social media that he needed to talk to me about.
Wow.
And I remember saying to him, so you are advocating for a group of men. Who goes back to that group of men and advocates for me? It should be you. And I don't feel like you're interested in even doing that.
Right.
So if you're not going to, then I don't know why we're even here.
Mm-hmm.
You
mm-hmm.
know, who advocates for me?
Right.
I have to advocate for myself.
Yeah.
And you don't seem to be interested in it. Anyway, so that happened, and that was making me feel a lot of feelings.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the same time, the house we were living in went on the market, and marijuana had just become legal in Oregon. So there was a giant housing explosion.
Oh. And
housing was very difficult to find. Mm-hmm. So we were like,
it is a buyer's market or seller's market. Yes, gotcha.
I mean, it was wild. Yeah. And so we're looking for a place to live and we can't find anything because everything's taken. I mean, within a day, everything's taken. And then I get a message one day from my friend, Dovey Peterson, mm-hmm. who says, hey, we just came across this rental in our cul-de-sac that we own, and you know, you're one of the top five people I would love to live in. What are the chances you would be moving to Provo?
Oh my goodness.
I know, right?
Yes.
And I said,
tender mercies.
And I was all, well, the chances are not good, but
uh-huh.
And then a week later I said, okay, let's talk seriously about this.
Wow.
Yeah, just things like just like moved into place. And then I think like the night before we were ready to move, maybe a few nights before, there was a house that came available in our, you know, in the ward we loved. And it was basically ours if we wanted it. And mm-hmm. I remember thinking, this is my ram in the thicket.
Uh-huh. Totally. Right? Totally.
And usually when I was having doubts about this giant move we were planning to take, I would pray and say, I need to know again, is this the right decision for my family? And I would generally get a message from someone in Provo, usually right after a prayer like that, that would say, hey, I really am excited for you to be here because I really need somebody.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say, okay, we're going to keep. Anyway,
yeah.
That night nothing happened. And I woke up in the morning feeling really upset. Like, what in the heck? You know, maybe we really are supposed to stay here. Maybe we're not. But also, like, I don't have any feeling anyway, mm-hmm. you know? And I felt like God, like, just shouted into my head, stop being a selfish whore and get your ass to Provo. You know, God speaks us in a language we understand.
Absolutely. Right? Right? Absolutely.
And I was like, all right, that's the end of that. I'm right. Never asking for that, for any sort of assurance again.
I love it. I love it.
And then we moved here in March, the end of March of 2016.
Mm-hmm.
And are we okay on time?
Yeah, we're totally good. Okay. I'll let you know. I'm soaking up every bit of this.
As long as...
We are good.
I don't want to be obnoxious.
No, so you move out here, and this is where we get to be friends.
I know, right?
Because you move on the other side of the train tracks that I live on.
Yeah, you are on the good side of the tracks.
I know. I feel bad about that. We should move.
No.
We don't belong on the other side.
You'll end up moving on the bench, and then you'll really be on the other side of the tracks.
No. Oh goodness.
So we moved here. And you and I have been Facebook friends.
Yeah, we had.
We've never met in person.
Right. I remember I was following your work, and honestly, you were part of like surveying the territory. Because like in my own marriage, Drew and I were like grappling with like this coming to terms with bisexuality. And you're right, it was like right around the November policy when Drew and I were like, okay, maybe we need to be more public about this, because the church doesn't just get to think that queer people are out of the pews when there's bisexuals and het marriages mm-hmm. in the pews, right? It's mm-hmm. just like this cloak of invisibility needed to be removed to kind of like,
sure.
People need to recognize. And so I remember surveying your work and just following and just like, oh, I love everything. I want to be a part of this so bad, but I'm just not in the space yet.
And then Florida.
Yeah, I was in Florida, and we ended up moving out here too neither here nor there for this podcast.
Wait, when did you move out?
So we moved out here 4 years ago.
I remember we were fairly close to...
Yeah, right about the same time. Yeah. Or maybe it was 3.5. Well, Drew and I moved out at different times too, because he had to finish work stuff.
Yeah.
But gosh, I want to say like 3.5, 4 years ago, something like that. And
remember, you were new to the area and we were new to the area.
Totally.
And shell shocked.
Yep, just get my feet wet, and I'm like, it's great. We're going to go to our ward and give it a good clean shot and a fair shake. And maybe some unrealistic expectations weren't met, but that's okay. But that's when I was like, oh my goodness, because you moved in shortly after, and I was like, Drew, did you know Geraldine Hasselpool is moving to Provo? And I heard she's moving really close to where we live. And I just really think we could be friends, you know? And I'm like this like wide-eyed naive, just like looking for anyone to like come out and just be myself with. And you showed up, and I'm just like, this is my favorite thing ever. And look, we get like a bonus Jeffrey, and like your kids are amazing and everything. And I like could not be happier with your decision to come out here.
I feel, Jeff and I talk about it a lot, we are happier.
Yeah.
We are exhausted, but we don't regret anything, any part of this.
I'm so glad.
Yeah. So we moved out here, and immediately I was like, okay, we're going to get involved with Provo Pride and USGA and PFLAG and all of the organizations, because we're here to help. Also, we're like fresh blood, and right? Like,
yeah, totally. And plus, you're from Oregon, right? So like you already have like the coolness factor off the charts.
Except we're not from the cool part of Oregon, we're from the cooler part of Oregon, but anyway.
Reading is weird. It takes up your whole body. You can't walk, you have to hold a book in your hands, and you have to look at words the whole time. That's why you have me. I'm Stephen Carter, the host of the Sunstone Magazine podcast. I narrate Sunstone's best articles, essays, fiction, and poetry for you, so you can do dishes, or rock climb, or drive your Ferrari, or skydive. Whatever it is you like to do while listening to the best of Mormon thought and experience. Listen to some of our free episodes at patreon.com/sunstone, and then join the We Do Fun Stuff While Learning About Mormon Stuff Club. I'll see you there.
Within a few weeks, we already had taken in our first homeless person.
Oh my goodness. You get here, you're unpacking boxes, and you're like, oh, come stay in our house with us. Oh, bless you. Bless you.
And she has lived... Yes, she's been really great and wonderful, and I don't want to embarrass her any more than that. Anyway... Mm-hmm. And we got involved with all the organizations and realized that what people really wanted was a place to hang out. So we started hosting like a monthly dinner.
I remember. I went. Yes, I went. Yeah.
And people would come and just hang out and talk. And it was just a very, we just tried to make it a very affirming space. That was it. That was our plan. We're going to do this. This will be what we do. And we'll just work with other organizations. But then it turned out like people had to come over a lot more often than once a month. And people started just dropping in all the time. And we were going through a lot of cereal and
macaroni
and cheese and all of that. So one day I went to Sam's Club, I think, and they had all their bagged cereal on sale. So I loaded up a shopping cart with that and milk, and I posted a picture on Facebook that said, when you feed a lot of college students, you go through a lot of milk and cereal.
Yeah.
And people are like, I can help. I want to help pay for cereal. I want to help. And
I remember feeling that. And I think you even used the hashtag queer meals before the nonprofit even existed.
Yes.
And I was like, oh my gosh, I want to help too. I want to help with queer meals.
So that was really where it started. Just us feeding and people just dropping in all the time to eat. Mm-hmm. Like during finals week, we have students that come by and sit here and study and we make sure they're fed and watered.
Right. And being able to focus on their studies because
also
people,
I'm like, oh, put your phone away.
Right.
I turn into a total mom. Put your phone away or you're going to give it to me. You need to study.
I love it. No, and that's what these kids need. I just feel like people underestimate the importance of just having a safe space to study where you not have to worry about like constantly being bombarded with things.
Yeah.
So Queer Meals is getting started. People are coming in more and more often.
I think we're calling it Queer Meals just Bobby Trends Mormon was out here, and I had been hesitant to use the word queer because I'd been told, like, you can't use it. And I said, you know, the thing I like about the word is that it encompasses the entire community and doesn't out anyone as to what part of the community they are.
That, can we pause for 1 second? That is like literally one of my favorite things about the word queer and why I've embraced it so much for my own identity, because I got so tired of like trying to explain what queer meant.
Hey, we
have a guest.
Our first guest.
You got a computer. You working?
We're recording a podcast, Jeffrey, in your home for Queer Meals. Do you want to say hello?
Hello, crap.
And that's Jeffrey, y'all. That's Jeffrey. As I was saying, because with the word queer, you don't have to constantly explain. I didn't have to explain my internal biology, what surgeries I had, what medication I was on, my gender experience, my sexual orientation, and all these intimate details of my life that like people take for granted as far as like their privacy on that. And so when I just say queer, look, gender queer, sexually queer, you don't get to know all the details of that anymore.
I love it.
And so I'm so glad you're embracing the word queer. I want everyone to embrace
it. I love it. And Bobby, I was in the car and I said, you know, I'm having the struggle because I know that it's offensive, and Bobby said, I think you should use it and I'll fight anyone who says you shouldn't.
Good.
And I said, all right. And one of the really great things that's come out of that is that because we've been in the media, like the news has had to say the word queer.
Yes.
The Freedom Festival, when they rejected us, had to say the word queer.
Yes. It's so
like,
true.
It has normalized the word. It's been in print. It's been in... And also, I feel like right away, people know that we are what we're about. We are about feeding queer people.
Yeah.
First and foremost.
Yeah.
And you know, that food comes in lots of different ways. It's not always something... You know, sometimes people need to be fed in other ways.
Absolutely.
Infection.
Right. Queer meals, exactly, because it is all about being fed. It's being able to have a place to talk. It's being able to place, like, I've made so many friends here, too. I didn't know so many. It's like, honestly, it's like EFY for Mormons who don't live in Utah, and they go to EFY, and they're like, oh, my gosh, I had no idea so many Mormons existed. This is amazing. And so when you come to the Pool's house, and you're greeted with queer meals, I'm like, oh, my gosh, friends, people, I had no idea how many of you existed. Like me, it's totally like that, and it's being fed. It's the connections.
Yeah.
It really is.
I do love that, and that right there is really our model. I spend a lot of time on social media just looking for people who need who need something that we can offer. And so I end up, you know, messaging or reaching out and saying, hey, tell me what's going on with your life, and finding out what their unique needs are. And generally I say, okay, come over for dinner and let's plan a time when you're free. And then immediately I reach out to people who I think they would enjoy, so that when they come here for a meal, they automatically have community. And then at the meal, we also say, okay, what are your other needs? Oh, you need, can we send you home with groceries? Mm-hmm. Can we send you home with toiletries? You need access to therapy. Oh, you want to know what the housing situation is like here and there. Like all of these things that we've been able to work through while we've been here is really great to then pass on and say, okay, here's what we can help you with. And then we follow through and say, okay, what are the, you know, how's it going? And it's been really beautiful to watch young queer people be able to launch. Like maybe they come to us and they are just in a terrible place and generally suicidal. We work with that population quite a bit.
I know, and you've had to take kids to hospitals and take care of, the whole works.
So we, being able to connect people and just then watching them, like, you know, get a better job and move into better housing and move into, and then watch them, you know, find partners and... Like, it's just really
to blossom and to grow blossom. Up. It is. It's like you're like the mom of like 400 queer kids. It really is like that.
I love it.
Well,
I love it.
And one of the things I've noticed a lot about queer meals that I have really appreciated that I feel like no other group is doing to the extent that queer meals is queer meals really does take care of the least of these. I mean, a lot of organizations are geared towards helping the LGBTQ community, but the queer meals is really geared towards like making sure people get up on their feet, you know, who can't even aren't in a space where they can go to some of like even the use air quotes, the nicer LGBTQ events or things like that. It's really helping people get on their feet from and build a life from themselves when life maybe didn't hand them the best hand in the first place. Yeah. And so, I mean, that is by far one of my favorite things about queer meals. Like, no one is turned away. No one is turned away here.
And we don't ask, I don't ask any questions. So yeah. I think it's really powerful for someone to be able to say, this is what I need, and for that need to be met.
Right.
Without judgment, without reservation. I think that's really powerful.
Almost kind of like Jesus, huh? That's how that's how Jesus did it, folks. That's how Jesus did it.
So I, I think that's a really important thing. And we don't, you know, people come to us and say, you know, I went to my bishop to get some help with food and he said he couldn't help me. And I always say, oh, it's a good thing you're here because we don't have very high standards.
Right.
We'll do whatever you need.
Right.
And
honestly, that's the higher standard right there. The higher standard is no one does get turned away. So then you have queer meals. It's amazing. I love it and everything. Let's talk a little bit more about Safe Xmas. So you've been doing it now for how many years? And it's coming up.
Fifth year of Safe Xmas.
Yes. Love it.
So the first year we opened the cabin, which was really a wonderful and magical place. It's a cabin owned by Marco Davis, who Sunstone people should know if they don't already.
Yeah,
Marco,
I totally know who that is.
Marco is fantastic.
Love it.
Anyway, hi Marco, I love you. then the next year we were living here and I thought, oh, we'll do it in our own home. It'll be perfect. And that was a terrible idea. So it was just way too packed and it just became a lot of difficult stuff.
Tight quarters.
Yes.
Sure.
And we learned some important lessons that year. So then the third year I reached out to a local hotel. I reached out to several local hotels to see who would be up for doing it. And the first one to get back to me was a local Marriott. And they were thrilled to work with us.
Oh, that's great.
That sounds like you're peeing.
Oh, we're just feeding some of the wildlife at the Queer Meals headquarters.
You're filling a water bowl.
Sorry.
Whew, a pigeon will probably go hop in that bowl in a minute. Because she always does.
It's double duty. It's for the dogs and the pigeons.
Yes, yes.
Love it.
So they were like, yeah, we don't really have anybody that comes in over the holidays because people leave Provo. They don't go to Provo for the holidays.
Right.
So they gave us a really great break on rooms and just let us basically do whatever we want.
That is so great.
We have a big, the big conference room, and it's the Provo Marriott on Freedom, the courtyard.
The courtyard. Okay. The courtyard, I know Marriott. What you're talking about. Yeah. Yeah.
There's so many Marriotts in Provo.
I imagine
and
that.
And it's not owned, this Marriott is not owned by corporate Marriott, so.
Oh, it's local.
It's got some local owners that own several local hotels, so.
Okay, cool.
Don't give credit to Marriott.
No, I wouldn't dare of endorsing corporate capitalism.
Thank you. Jeff stays here at the house and cooks food and brings it in. He shuttles that back and forth, and I stay there to manage, you know, any drama that comes up.
Mm-hmm.
There's always drama.
Surprise! Right.
Not as much as
it would be with straight people.
Oh, there's less. Let's be honest. If it has to be drama, it better be queer drama.
It is always queer drama, and I live for it. No.
I love it.
Anyway, making sure that... It also, finding people. I like to be in the middle of Safe Christmas and find other people who are like, oh, I'm home alone for Christmas. Get down here.
Right.
We've got pajamas. We've got hot cocoa.
Wonderful.
Yeah, it's really great.
I love it. So then what can people do to help? You need donations? Do you need volunteers? What's the most important thing?
Right now, yes, we definitely need donations to cover the cost of rooms.
Mm-hmm.
We assign people to rooms, and then we pay for that out of our pocket if we have to.
Okay.
So, and then also this year, instead of Jeff doing a lot of the cooking, because I'm trying for Jeff not to get sick.
Right.
We're looking into doing some catering. So, we've been contacting some local restaurants who we know are open on Christmas. I don't want anyone to work on Christmas that isn't already planning on it.
Right.
So probably Chinese food.
Yeah. So then, if I'm hearing you, so people's donations will go towards help housing queer kids on Christmas and help feeding queer kids on Christmas.
Yes. Mm-hmm. The other thing that donations go to is we have several people from out of state who would like to come in. We have someone in Florida right now who would really like to be here for Christmas. We have someone we have a couple people in California. So being able to help them with travel funds, even if people are able to give airline miles or something like that would be super helpful.
Okay, So all you listeners out there with extra miles, air miles, that's definitely... cool thing to do too. Awesome. Yeah.
And last year everybody got animal onesies. So we had a wild zoo of people hanging out, which was very fun.
It just fits the theme. It really does.
I know. And I want to do that again this year, but this year we're all doing matching pajamas.
Oh, this is adorable.
The theme this year, I know, right?
This
matching
is the cutest.
Pajamas for everybody.
Right?
How cute is that?
I know. I tried to do it for my kids and they won't let me do it anymore. So I might be coming to Queer Xmas.
Yes, perfect. Bonnie told me this year that we should have a theme for the first time, and the theme is dinosaurs in space. So
I love it. I love it.
So everyone gets dinosaurs in space pajamas. And I think we're going to, so it'll be like a t-shirt and pajama pants.
Because
let's be real, that's the kind of pajamas anyone wears anyway.
Sure.
And I think we'll put the t-shirt online for people to buy as a way to support Safe Xmas.
Perfect. So, perfect.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. So where can people go to make this donation? Do they do it online?
Yeah, safechristmas.com.
Okay.
.org.
Okay. So I just want to plug and say Queer Meals is amazing. If I wasn't already making it clear how big of a fan I was, I'm totally a big fangirl of Queer Meals and I've benefited from it. I love the work you're doing, the work Jeffrey is doing, and just you two are making a huge difference in our community here in Provo. You're doing the Lord's work. You're doing the Lord's work. Is there anything you would like to say in closing? Anything, last comments you want to share? advice you can give to listeners? Anything?
I think the advice that I would give, you know, the one thing I get asked a lot about is how to be a good ally.
Oh, sure.
That is such a, and it's such a timeless question because also it changes all the time.
Right.
And the thing that I would say, and it's what we've tried really hard to do here, is to listen to the community and meet their needs without judgment or reservation. Mm-hmm. So it's easy to hear them, you know, it's easy to say, oh, the queer community needs access to PrEP, right? Mm-hmm. And whatever someone's own personal judgments are on PrEP,
right,
need to be aside,
right,
need to be set aside because the needs of the community, and that's a weird thing to bring up, but that is something that we're kind of working on. So
yeah,
like how do we, though, if that's a need that's in the community, how can we help people get better access to that?
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's what you excel at too, getting people access to things they just don't have access to.
And that's the work of allies. I mean, yeah, it's one thing to march in parades and to hold signs. Like even my own allyship has evolved. I no longer march in parades. I participate in pride festivals as queer meals, not as, you know, an entity.
Sure.
My own entity. I, you know, I'm there in a supportive role.
Mm-hmm.
And there, so like even my own allyship has evolved. And I think that's important too for people to be like, it's okay for your own allyship to evolve too.
Right. To listen and let yourself evolve and roll with it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And be responsive to the community. When the community says straight people need to stop showing up at Pride.
Yeah.
Guess what? Stop showing up at Pride.
Well, no. And you're so right. It's so tricky because like there is a lot of great allyship happening. And there is some allyship though when your voice becomes so loud you can't hear queer voices anymore, that's the problem. Because you're now no longer functioning in an allyship supportive role, but you're now speaking over queer folks.
And the irony of me doing a podcast.
No. You are the supportive role because I am the one who asked Geralyn, may I interview you? So you are being the supportive role in this one. And I basically just wanted to plug Queer Meals and Safe Xmas because it's benefited my life so much. And I know it can benefit more queer folks and just finding them at the space, getting them access to these things and just getting the word out. So thank you so much for being on the podcast. Yeah. And I love your home and it's real, it's authentic. And this is definitely the place to be. If anybody wants to support the wonderful work happening at Queer Meals, you can make a donation online or you can make a donation to Safe Xmas at
safexmas.com and queermeals.org.
Perfect. Thank you so much, everyone, for tuning in. This has been another episode of the Sunstone Fireside Podcast.